We're back to the Neil Haley Show and also the Media Giant Effect. And I'm excited to welcome to the program my co-host, Dr. Ted Grawlner. Dr. Ted, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hi, Neil. Very well, thank you. And we have another exciting guest today.
I'm excited because he played college basketball and became an author. So he took a little bit of a route. JD Slacker. JD, thanks for stopping by. And JD, the story of kind of how, you know, college basketball player turned author. Did you always think you wanted to be a writer growing up?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Neil and Dr. Ted. It's such an honor to be here. But in short, absolutely not. I definitely did not think I was going to become a writer or an author. Basketball was sort of how I identified myself early on in my, you know, my youth and my, you know, early career. But yeah, it was definitely something that was unexpected even for me.
All right, Ted, you can go ask some author questions because you always are the research guy.
Well, the reviews that I'm reading say that you paint a picture with a pen as much as a classical artist does with their paintbrush. You are able to elicit emotions with your writing that are pretty mature, I think. I'm not even being a writer. I hated writing in school. I don't know how at 28 you're able to put out such a quality product as you are now. It's cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I mean, I think I take a lot of pride in each sentence that I put down and create in any book that I write, or, you know, even short story or really anything for that matter. And I feel like the way I'm able to sort of elicit or sort of pull out that raw emotion in my readers is, you know, I actually hand write all of my first drafts of my books. And that's a huge part of my process, being that, you know, I feel like it really makes me slow down and get almost behind my pencil and paper in a way that gives me the opportunity to be very selective about each word that I put down, and really take this that real space and time to, you know, focus on the setting or the scene description or what the character's wearing. And I'm very detailed with how I write. My stories wouldn't be necessarily your most fast paced, page turning, like thrilling type of writing, but mm-hmm. I really do take the time to sort of give you the full picture of what that room looks like, what the color of that desk is, the hat that they're wearing. 'Cause that's kind of how I see the world and how I think about things and how I remember it. So I try to write like that too, but you know, I really appreciate you finding that through those reviews. And yeah, I'm very appreciative of that. People sort of agree with that description in my writing.
Your story is really amazing how you became an author, right? It didn't just come out, it came out overnight almost.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I had this incredible relationship with this little boy who had sickle cell disease named Luke Bodden. And he was my biggest fan and someone that didn't miss a single game of mine when I was playing high school basketball. And it was only when I learned that he had sickle cell disease and he had to go into the hospital for a bone marrow transplant did I learn that he actually was like my biggest fan. And I ended up becoming best friends with this young kid. And that actually ended up being what my first novel, Moonflower, is about. And when he passed away only 4 years later at the age of 10, it really, you know, had a major shift in my life. It made me really reevaluate what's important. Who do I really want to become? You know, is basketball the only thing I want to do with my life? And, you know, kind of much like you with your sudden career shift, you know, it's like you sort of realize like maybe there's more to sports than there's more to life than just sports. And that's what writing was this way to tell the story of someone who believed in me so much. And I felt like I had to share their story with the world.
I didn't realize that that disease was actually fatal. Is that mostly because in pediatric population, it's much harder on them?
Well, it's a very complicated illness because sickle cell disease is a genetic illness that you're born with. And it's something that affects the shape of your blood. And so being that it's such a difficult blood disorder, it affects all the major organs in the body. So you can have liver disease, kidney disease. And what actually ended up taking Luke's life at 10 was a stroke.
Wow.
You know, because it just caused so many different complications in the body. And yeah, it can be fatal if it is, you know, met with certain complications. And one of the other reasons Luke's illness became fatal was because he had a bone marrow transplant. And a bone marrow transplant is the only known cure for sickle cell disease, or was at the time. And when you do have that procedure, obviously it's such a massive procedure that there's so many complications that can come from that beyond the transplant. And so that's actually what ended up being the thing that took Luke's life, was all of these complications that arose after the transplant. And that's not uncommon for, unfortunately, tons of kids that suffer from this disease. And sickle cell disease is a 95% African-American disorder. Mm-hmm. So it is something that isn't as maybe well known amongst other populations. And so I do a lot of work with the Luke Strong Foundation as the director of relationship development for that nonprofit, to hopefully try and educate as many people as I can on that illness. And that was a big part of the reason why I wrote Moonflower as well.
Is that what got you started on speaking? Because I understand that's a big part of your career.
Yeah. I mean, I would say in short, yes, but I also actually was doing some speaking even just as an athlete while I was still playing in college. They would send me off to do, you know, charity events and fundraisers for the community. And I got to do plenty of that while I was playing as well. So that just kind of naturally
opened
in a way. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that ever since, and I love it. So
tell us about your latest novel.
Yeah. So my new book, Darling, You're Not Alone, just became available a couple months ago. And it's a really, I think, an amazing story about triumph, overcoming extreme adversity, and one that I think is a really hopeful book. But the book is about a kid named Phoenix Ivor, who is a 15-year-old kid growing up in the small town of Darling, Colorado in the year 1999. And Darling, Colorado is sort of this like small town, kind of wholesome, like very just, you know, could be anywhere and any place in the world. And Phoenix is this kid who kind of suffers from, like, you know, I think pretty standard, like, social anxieties and depression and some of the things that at 15, you know, you're just kind of questioning in the world, like, is this world really a good place? Like, why do I see all this bad stuff happening? But he doesn't really know who he is, and he's trying to, you know, figure out who he wants to become. And he has this incredible relationship with his father named Herman Ivor. And Herman is this like glass half full, always positive, someone who, you know, Phoenix really relies on to sort of be the light in this dark world for him. When Phoenix sort of discovers that his father has this like really mysterious past, where he used to be a police officer, but somehow now he's not anymore. And he's just the high school security guard at Darling High School. And so the book sort of takes off from there in this way that you have this relationship between Phoenix and his father. And also there's, you know, Phoenix's best friend. And there's this, it's kind of this community I sort of build around Phoenix, and you get to meet all these people when there's this sudden, like, really tragic event that takes place. And from that, Phoenix has to almost sort of use all of the lessons and the things he's learned in Darling, You're Not Alone to then take on with him in this kind of journey to discover, like, how do I really believe in this world when I've seen so much bad and experienced so much darkness? And I really wrote this book, Neil, to sort of, I don't know, kind of illustrate, I feel like, how a lot of people can be feeling at times with whatever it is that they might be going through.
No, absolutely. That the motivation that we all have to have through challenges, and how we overcome those challenges each and every day, Dr. Ted, right? It's kind of like as human beings have to keep going. Right, Ted?
That's true.
That's what happens.
Well, I noticed that JD has several charities that he participates in, with the Red Cross, along with Sickle Cell, that foundation that mm-hmm. you established. You can't afford any more tragedies. You don't have time in your schedule.
Hey, well, I think, as much charity work as I do and I'm affiliated with, they give back equally to me in the way of just like support, energy, endurance. Like they're so kind of, you know, yeah, it's a gift that keeps on giving, and we sort of share that with each other. But Yeah, I definitely am. I'm definitely on my hands full for sure.
I was surprised by the Red Cross until I read that you were actually burned out of a home. And that's what got you associated with what the Red Cross does for people who are in those tragedies. And it sounds like a really good cause.
Yeah, yeah. So I began working with the Red Cross in 2019 after my family's home burned down in the Woolsey Fire in Malibu. And, you know, I just had like this kind of, I don't know. I mean, similarly to my experience with Luke and, you know, which I spoke about and how he sort of had this great awakening in me after our home burned down in the Woolsey Fire, you kind of learn and see like there's so many other people that are so much worse off than you. And the best thing I felt like I could do when I felt so helpless after losing my home was like, well, why don't I try to give back to others that maybe have lost their homes too and don't have the resources that we do. So I actually got to travel to all the other burn sites up and down California where other people had lost homes and meet these people in Fresno and Bakersfield and, you know, all over my home state. And, I still am very close with all of those people that I met. And, it's a pretty amazing thing to have, you know, had that experience. And my Red Crossers and I were still very, very tight, and they're with me always. And yeah, it was an amazing experience to get to kind of, you know, become a national ambassador for the American Red Cross and speak with people that had been similarly affected. And yeah, it was a great experience.
Wow. Okay. Where is the best place people can connect with you, JD? Where can they go?
Yeah, yeah. You can. I mean, the easiest place would be to find me on my website, www.jdwritesbooks.com. And you can also find me on social media at JD_Slackard on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on my publisher's website, summerhousepublishing.co, or the website for my new book is darlingyournotalone.com. Any of those places, you can find out more information about me. So,
and find out when you're speaking again and all these different things, right? Things are opening
up.
Yeah,
yeah. That schedule is getting put together and it is getting very busy as we speak, of course. But yeah, I'm excited to get back out there and be meeting with some more people. So
what is the biggest challenge of getting booked as a speaker? What would you say for people out there who always want to speak?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is when people aren't willing to maybe put themselves in a situation where it's a room of like 10 people or 15 people. Like you have to be sort of, you have to build your own momentum as a speaker. And I think like I got started doing a lot of really small kind of just connections to friends or people that I knew. Cause all of a sudden those turn into even bigger events and bigger events and bigger events. And then before you know it, you didn't even know how you got started as like a, you know, public speaker or motivational speaker. So I would say be open and keep your opportunities open and be willing to do any event in the beginning of your career. Cause that practice and that repetition will help you get better as you achieve higher and higher heights of public speaking.
Well, we appreciate it. Best of luck, Dr. Ted. Great guest, right? Motivational guy.
Yeah. This was fun.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks, JD. Take care.
You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.